Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. And I welcome you. Today, it's one of those empowering hours. My guest will be Dr. Tony Bark. Dr. Bark is a pediatric physician, a very prestigious homeopathic doctor in Chicago. And we're going to talk about challenging vaccine theory on safety and efficacy. This is very important. So we're going to ask her a lot of hard-hitting questions. Information today from Chris Hedges and Truthdig, Cornell West and the Fight to Save the Black Prophetic Tradition. Very interesting. I'll be sharing a commentary also on corporatism and the corporatizing of all things America. We'll also take a look at, is your smart meter spying on you? It is. And multinationals are scheming to build a world where the corporate interests supersede legally the sovereign interest, meaning a corporation will have more power if the Trans-Pacific Partnership passes than our state and federal laws or constitution. And always we begin with the latest on health and healing, and always from good quality science. We have a lot of people suffering from dementia today. And most of the people suffering from dementia don't understand it. They can't put it in perspective. Why? Because their long-term memory seems fine. They can recall in great detail something that might have happened 30 years ago. But they'll forget a movie that they just saw last night. They won't remember someone's name, even someone familiar with them. They'll forget what they just read in the newspaper. Their short-term memory is really challenged, and it only gets worse. And it gets so bad that within a year of that beginning, they'll start repeating themselves. And you'll notice that when someone will give you the same identical statement 2, 3, 4, 5 times in a row. Recently, I was having lunch in a local vegan restaurant on the Upper West Side, and I saw a longtime friend, and I went over to the friend, say hello, and just to stand there because the person was with some other people. I just said hello, and the person began to talk, but I was standing there listening to this person talk for 10 minutes. He repeated the same identical thing at least 10 times, and I looked around the table, and I could see that the people were feeling anxious or nervous or embarrassed by this. And I said to my friend, why don't you come in to the office? I have a wonderful new protocol I think you'd really enjoy He said, why do I need a protocol? I said, well, because just to keep yourself in top mental condition. He said, I'm in top mental condition. I said, that may be true, but you can always get better. I didn't want to tell him that he has dementia, because he has dementia. And from there, you go to Alzheimer's. And there, you have a hard time coming back. So I'm saying now that the American lifestyle, with so much pro-inflammatory cytokines, with so much alcohol and drugs and medications, with polluted environments that we live in and work in, with formaldehyde in our clothing and people bringing stuff back from the dry cleaners, not realizing DEET and other very toxic chemicals used in that, and now it's on your body, and now that's going in because you sweat, and as you sweat, you open a window for toxins to get into the body. What we consume, never looking at what this does to us, but it does a lot of bad, and that means bad to the brain. Here is the latest of why you should be concerned. This is from Physicians for Responsible Medicine, published in the New England Journal of Medicine. Quote, high blood glucose levels may increase the risk of developing dementia. Researchers from the Adult Changes in Thought study followed 2,000 men and women who were members of this group for 6.8 years, and high blood sugar levels were associated with an increased likelihood of developing dementia compared to normal blood glucose levels. And by the way, they considered normal to be a fasting level of 100 milligrams per deciliter. I consider that way too high. I would consider that pre-diabetic. I believe it should be closer to 65 to 75. In any case, think of it this way. Every time you have a soft drink, when you have sugar in your coffee, when you eat a bagel, a donut, a roll, when you have regular pasta and bread, that's all breaking down into monosaccharides, polysaccharides, and disaccharides, various types of sugar. That's going to end up spiking your blood sugar, and that is what can lead to dementia. It also causes inflammation, and it stresses your pancreas and your adrenals. So go towards legumes and beans and root vegetables. Go towards berries. They're an excellent source, or citrus, outstanding. Stay moderate on, and or not regular, on dried fruits and lots of greens. The more greens, the better. Remember this. Greens detoxify and cleanse. Reds repair and rejuvenate. That's why you need both. A new article on sodium fluoride. And, of course, most people get sodium fluoride in their mouthwash and their toothpaste, or when they go to the dentist. This is the latest. Quote, shocking, the industrial applications of sodium fluoride. If you're connected to natural health circles, you've probably been privy to a lot of buzz about fluoride. Years ago, it began as a concern among health-conscious people about the substance's presence in toothpaste. Apparently, toothpaste manufacturers were paying attention. In the past, it was nearly impossible to find toothpaste free of sodium fluoride, but luckily, that trend has reversed. Much has been made recently in alternate news publications of cities around the world adding fluoride to the drinking water and the logical objectives of a well-informed citizenry. Obviously, many people know that fluoride is bad, but what is really bad about it? Well, sodium fluoride is defined, quote, as a pickling agent with many industrial applications. Sodium fluoride is an organic chemical compound with on the periodic table. It is made by neutralizing hydrofluoric acid, and it appears as a colorless, solid white crystal which provides the fluoride ion for most industrial applications. So, what are some potential adverse health effects of fluoride exposure? Well, ingestion of fluoride in high enough doses or low doses over a long period of time is known to cause stomach pain, nausea, vomiting, loss of appetite, general weakness, risk of convulsions, ulcers, cardiac arrhythmias, hypocalcemia with nervous system disorders, dental fluorosis, that's the discoloring of the teeth, skeletal fluorosis, that's where your bones become porous, development of osteosarcoma, a rare bone cancer, and fluorosis is the condition of the formation that deposits fluoride in bones and teeth. And according to Dr. Dean Burke, one of the founders of the National Cancer Institute, who I interviewed many times, he said that we have about 15,000 people dying each year from cancer that was caused by fluoride. It's mutagenic, it's carcinogenic. So the next time you go to the store, look at the label. If it says fluoride-free, good. If it's got fluoride, you know there's going to be a bad effect. From UCLA, the Mattel Children's Hospital, comes a new study. Quote, remarkable, fish oil able to reverse liver disease in children with intestinal failure. Researchers at the University of California, Los Angeles, UCLA, have found a way to potentially reverse one of the deadly risks associated with intestinal failure in children. Their discovery indicates fish oil may be able to prevent liver disease commonly caused by intestinal failure treatment. Then that's the study was actually called, quote, remarkable and life-changing for children who may otherwise have a bleak outlook. And children who have intestinal failure are unable to eat normally. Instead, a cocktail including sugar and proteins and fat from soybean oils injected in their body via tube. And it's very, very bad, and that increases the risk of liver failure substantially. So that's good news. Well, why not do this? Why not simply give children, all children, the omega-3 fat acids? You can give it in fish oil if you choose, but you could also give it from walnut oil, flaxseed oil. These are all good sources of the omega-3 fatty acids. Beetroot bread helps to lower heart disease risk. This is from the Journal of Nutrition. In this open-label randomized trial, it suggests that bread can be used as a vehicle to increase intakes of cardioprotective beetroot in the diet and could offer new options for those who need to manage high blood pressure. This was a UK-based research, and they looked at 200 grams, that's four slices, of beetroot bread, led to lowering of diastolic blood pressure substantially when compared to a control group that ate normal bread. Quote, "These exciting and novel findings show for the first time that bread containing beetroot improves blood vessel function." Okay, well, how about this? How about using that in oatmeal? Or how about quinoa? Or how about spelt? Or whole grain? How about with brown rice? Or if you're going to put it into a bread, why not put it into an Ezekiel bread or an Essene bread? You'll get even better results. Another good study shows that magnesium helps your mind and body. From the Sleuth Journal, quote, "I've been looking into nutrient deficiencies lately and came across magnesium. Magnesium is a mineral that is essential to the body for maintaining normal muscle and nerve function. It also plays a key role in keeping a healthy immune system and maintaining heart rhythm and building strong bones. Magnesium is also a key ingredient in over 300 biochemical reactions in the body. If one were to have a magnesium deficiency, they might experience muscle spasms, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, anxiety issues, migraines, osteoporosis, and cerebral infarction." That's a stroke. So if any of these symptoms are showing up within the body, it might be worth trying magnesium. How much? About 400 plus milligrams a day seems to be ideal for most people. I would suggest using it for magnesium citrate. But now here's what I will tell you I know from working with thousands, tens of thousands of people. Magnesium is great for helping people get a better night's sleep. Now, we know that our sleep hormone is called melatonin. But when you have melatonin and you have magnesium near bedtime, that helps balance out our stress hormones. And stress and tension are the reasons a lot of people simply can't sleep. It relaxes the central nervous system. Serotonin, which relaxes the nervous system and elevates mood, is dependent upon magnesium. And you get better, bigger, stronger muscles with magnesium. Why? Because magnesium allows the body to produce more insulin-like growth factor, IGF-1, which is a major contributor to the growth and strength of muscles. And furthermore, adenosine triphosphate, ATP, is the cell's energy store, and it's created with the help of magnesium. You get better flexibility. It helps loosen tight muscles. You're less likely to cramp. It gives you a better matrix of material in the bone to strengthen the bone. It remineralizes your teeth. You heard me right. You can literally remineralize your teeth with a balance of phosphorus, calcium, and magnesium. It helps alkalize the body. Magnesium helps return the body's pH, and it reduces lactic acid. And also, it helps you to hydrate. It helps to relieve constipation. And it has a lot of enzyme functions. One more reason that magnesium is important in our diet. And one other thing that we should be looking at is the hidden dangers of overeating. This is from Epoch Times. Quote, "Older generations say, eat only until 70 to 80% full. It sounds simple, but it may be just part of the solution to fatty liver syndrome. Now, why? You've heard me mention many times on this program that fatty liver syndrome, as the name suggests, is the accumulation of fat in the cells of the liver that can sometimes damage liver cells. The damage is often considered insignificant but may cause scarring known as fibrosis, which may progress to cirrhosis, and that can kill you. That impairs liver's functions. Now, once fibrotic tissue is formed, it's hard to restore the liver back to its original state. You can through detoxification and regenerative therapies, but that takes time. You could talk about the breakthroughs in modern medicine, but there are none. There is no drug that's going to do this. Exercising, resting, a cleansing diet, all can help fatty liver syndrome. However, it's only possible to stop the liver from further deterioration to more serious conditions such as cirrhosis. Nowadays, the importance of proper eating is often overlooked. You've heard me mention that virtually every cooking show, every road show, shows us people gorging. I mean massive amounts of gorged food. In fact, there was recently an ad in a movie theater, and it was by the guy who owns all these Nobu restaurants, and he was the chef, and it showed him at one of these barbecues. And I saw a sign that says, you know, order by the pound, and you saw huge pieces of pork being consumed by people. Any idea what that's going to do to your liver? Remember, the liver has to detoxify. The liver has to cleanse. You start eating more than what the liver can cleanse, it can't function right. It gets overloaded. Imagine this. Imagine your liver is, for half what it does, it's a sewer. It's your septic system. Now, put more in your toilet than what can go down, and it backs up on you. That's what happens when you're overeating, simply overeating. That's why it's always wise to stop eating before you're full. You should never eat till you're full. You should never have a bloated feeling. You should never feel like, oh, I'm packed. If you can do that, you've gone too far. So what we need to do to help our liver is cleanse it. We need to detoxify the more green juices, the more chlorophyll, like wheatgrass juice, the more alkaline juices, watermelon juice, lemon, lime, grapefruit, whole skin, seed. That will help your liver, and vitamin C and quercetin. I'm Gary Knoll. That's our health and nutrition report. Now, since we don't have Kucinich yet, as soon as we get him, we'll come to you. I want to go to our environmental report. This is from David Johnson of Alternet. The title of the article, which will be posted today on our website, is Multinationals Are Scheming to Build a Corporate Death Star That Will Zap Democracy Across the Planet. Quote, I'm sounding the alarm. Right now, governments and the giant multinational corporations are engaged in writing a treaty that would overrule national laws and try to rein in what these giant corporations can do to us. This treaty will allow corporations to sue governments for lost profits if governments try to enforce environmental, health, labor, and other laws. One smoking gun example that shows us what this treaty is about is an argument over whether to carve out special treatment for tobacco because it is so harmful, or give it the same protections that other corporations and their products are due to receive. The upcoming Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal has been called the Corporate Death Star. It is a NAFTA on steroids that goes so far beyond trade that it's really not about trade at all. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is about putting corporate and investor rights above the rights of regular people. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is being negotiated with a rigged process designed from the start to end, really, really end, the power of individuals, states, and governments. In effect, it makes the multinational corporations and the billionaires in control of everything in our society. And government representatives hoping to end up with lucrative corporate payoffs are at the table, negotiating on their behalf. Labor groups, consumer groups, health groups, environmental groups, human rights groups, civil rights groups, democracy advocates, representatives of smaller, local, not giant multinational businesses, potential competitors of the already at the top giants, or any other stakeholder group that could possibly oppose the corporate agenda, you're considered the enemy. You will have no rights. Let me repeat that. Let me be unequivocal and clear. If this completely corrupt, sociopathic Congress and White House passes the Trans-Pacific Partnership, you will have no constitution. You'll have no state or federal laws ever again that will protect you. They'll be gone forever, not in your lifetime or any other lifetime. It will be the complete corporate rule of the world. And for the average American, they don't care. But for you, I know you do care. So start to protest and let people know this is not good. In fact, just one aspect of this is leaked out. The U.S. government, meaning Barack Obama and the clowns around him, have sought to include tobacco in a regional free trade pact, which would mean that tobacco companies can use trade rules to compromise government anti-smoking regulations. Therefore, you'll never see another pack of cigarettes with any warning on it. They can advertise to kids. They could advertise for four-year-olds to smoke. It wouldn't be a thing you could do about it. That's how corrupt all these politicians, I mean all of these politicians, everyone on Wall Street, they're all sociopaths. And most of the left. And almost all the Democrats that voted for Obama and the Nation magazine, these are all corporate hacks. Now, I don't even talk about the Republicans because they're just too lost to talk about. They're just so screwed up. Man, they've been sleeping under the Wawa tree for too long. But for those who are independent-minded and are seeing the truth, none of these clowns in Washington has your interests at stake. And those that did, like Alan Grayson or Dennis Kucinich, a handful of them, they were either thrown out or given minimal opportunity to make change. So understand something. It's coming, and it's going to be here shortly. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, it is the most evil treaty in American history. So challenge it. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to be talking with Dr. Tony Bark shortly, and commentary coming up on Cornell West and the fight to save the black prophetic tradition by Chris Hedges and Truth Dig. But I'm concerned about the corporatization. I'm concerned that none of this would be happening. We wouldn't have an attack against Syria planned. We wouldn't be meddling in all the affairs of all the countries of the world in the way we do. We wouldn't have 1,000 military bases. We wouldn't have given $16 trillion to failed banks and corporations using the public's money to guarantee these people so they could have bonuses, buy up their competition, and not lend a dollar to anyone who deserved it. We wouldn't have all these home foreclosures. We wouldn't have 18 million hungry children each day in the United States. We wouldn't have 1.5 million children getting out of school and having no home to go to, homeless. We wouldn't have inequality. We would not have a media that is so biased, all of it. We wouldn't have any of this if we didn't have a relatively small group of people, including the Rockefellers and the foundations they formed. Remember, it was David Rockefeller who formed the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberg Group, and then staffed these organizations with people who were tied to him ideologically and financially. Brzezinski, Kissinger. Have you seen any of these people brought up on crimes against humanity? Did you see Kissinger brought up when he was responsible as running the State Department? And we have it in documents that were released and on Nixon's tapes of acknowledging that the United States played a role in the coup that killed Allende and brought Pinochet to power for the next 17 years? Nothing. No, once you're in that circle and you realize the foundations, the Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation, the think tanks, all these think tanks, they all are supported by some very wealthy, powerful people. We're not talking about a lot of people. We're talking about maybe 2,000 people control virtually everything. And they keep their ownership of a lot of what they do hidden from the public. Now, the financial industry, the chemical industry, the drug companies, the nuclear industrial complex, and the dirty energy empires work like tumor cells for the relentless destruction of the environment that they themselves depend upon for their lives. And the rest of us stand by and watch what happens. Now, according to Dr. Brian Minch, you have to understand that everything we do, that we do not stop and think, empowers them. Where do you put your money? Where do you buy your clothes? Where do you buy your food? What car do you own? All of this gives them the money they need to continue. The global financial crisis of 2008 cost approximately $20 trillion for Americans. It caused millions to lose their jobs and homes in the worst recession since the Great Depression. And the financial crisis became a human crisis. The World Bank estimated that 53 million people worldwide were thrown into poverty and that between 200,000 and 400,000 babies die annually as a result. So we're not talking about having innocent bystanders when you have had what amounts now to 1 million babies die total since this recession, then shouldn't some of the responsibility for their unfortunate deaths lie with those people who precipitated this? The Wall Street crowd, the Federal Reserve people. Millions of children in sub-Saharan Africa have suffered severe malnutrition and long-term brain damage as fallout from the financial disaster. Suicide rates rise and fall with the state of the economy. Unemployment and foreclosure are the largest triggers and increase suicide risk. About 35,000 Americans die every year from suicide. That's as many as die from car accidents. We never had that in the 1940s, 50s, 60s, and 70s and 80s. We have it now. The number one cause of death in 10 to 15-year-old boys is suicide. When I was growing up, no boy committed suicide, and especially not 10 to 15-year-olds, because they were exploring life. And yet, suicide rates in Europe, where the recession had been even more severe, are even higher. It was an avoidable disaster caused by widespread failures in government regulation, corporate mismanagement, and heedless risk-taking by Wall Street. It was the private market, not government programs, that made, packaged, and sold most of these wretched loans, and without regard to their quality. The packaging, combination with credit default swaps and other esoteric derivatives, spread the contagion throughout the world, and that's why what initially seemed to be a large but containable U.S. mortgage problem touched off a worldwide financial crisis. The speculative binge was abetted by a giant shadow banking system in which the banks relied heavily on short-term debt, snake oil mortgage hucksters and credit rating agencies that essentially prostituted themselves for cash from the investment banks. Regulators lack the political will to scrutinize and hold accountable the institutions they were supposed to oversee. The financial industry spent $2.7 billion lobbying. That's what they got. While individuals and committees afflicted with it made more than $1 billion of campaign contributions. So the politicians were taking the money, billions, from those who wanted no control over what they did. And they both got what they wanted. The politicians got reelected or got very fat paying jobs in the private sector, and those in Wall Street and corporate America got everything they wanted. No more regulations. The banking industry is completely unchastened. It is now pressing a full frontal assault on repealing the Dodd-Frank, a small, putrid little nothing of a law, but even that is too much for them. Then look at the chemical industry. It was Albert Einstein that is supposedly attributed with the statement, if the bee disappeared from the face of the earth, man would only have 4 years to live. Although Einstein may not have actually said that, and he was not an entomologist, the importance of pollinators in modern agriculture is difficult to overstate. Humans likely will not survive a total collapse of the bee population, and we're headed in that direction. 87 of the top human food crops, which supply 90% of the world's nutrition, are pollinated by bees. And yet, we do not talk about this as if we want to get to the problem and get to the solution. Colony collapse disorder began in 2007. The bees were abandoning their hives, losing their honing behavior, and acting disoriented, much like a bee with autism. And like three blind mice, scientists, federal regulators, and the media initially pointed the finger at climate change and poor nutrition and fungus and cell tower radiation and mites and viruses. Finally, they began to open their eyes. A new class of pesticides that systematically infiltrates the entire plant from seed to flower, called a nucleonicotinoids, attacks the nervous system of insects and devastates their internal brain chemistry. These neonicotinoids surged in popularity about the time that the colony collapse appeared. Not surprisingly, they were found to be as toxic to beneficial insects as they were to pests. These pesticides have risen to the top of the list of the culprits. The European Union has placed a two-year ban on neonicotinoids, but nothing in the United States. Why? Because the EPA is completely corrupt and our U.S. Congress is completely corrupt and everyone is corrupt. Did I miss someone? I hope not, because I hold all of them in total disdain. I think they're all a bunch of schmucks. And that's only the good I could say on the air. I think that these people are morons, imbeciles. I think that they are sociopaths. I think that they have no integrity. And yet, why in the world do you vote for them? Do you think that you vote for the less of 100 or 200 or 350 evil people that somehow is going to have a good outcome? It won't. They lie about everything. They know the problem, but they also know who's going to pay their future income, and that's the problem. The chemical companies Bayer and Syngenta and BASF and DuPont and Monsanto have waved a smokescreen in front of the bee calamity, claiming the mystery cannot be solved and not even precautionary action can be taken. And as long as they control the political process, they're correct. Look at the drug companies. About 20 years ago, the United States became and still is virtually the only major country where the $600 billion industry can advertise directly to consumers. Patients now tell their doctors what drugs they should be on. For the drug companies, the results have been spectacular. For the public health, the exact opposite. The U.S. is 49th in the world in life expectancy, despite Americans taking more prescription drugs per capita than any other country. Spending on prescription drugs have more than doubled from 1999 to 2008. 9 out of 10 adults over 60 are on prescription medications. That's 9 out of 10, 90%, as are 1 in every 4 children and teenagers. Well, I got a question for you. For those of us who are baby boomers, or those of you who are over 45, how many teenagers do you know when you were growing up were on drugs? Was it 1 in 4? No. Not at all. More than 20% of all American adults are taking at least one drug for psychiatric or behavioral disorders. And what exactly is the science to support that you have a brain chemical imbalance? How about none? In fact, in my new film, Manufacturing Madness, that'll be out in the spring, you will see what happens when a group of psychiatrists, 12 of them, interview a patient, and with a stopwatch on the screen, you see that the psychiatrist gives a diagnosis and a prescription within 3 minutes to each person. Then going back to that doctor's office with a camera and asking, "Doctor, you interviewed this person. This person happens to be a doctor. It happens to be completely healthy. What is the basis of saying that they have these mental conditions, need this drug?" "Well, it's really subjective. So you have no science?" "No, there is no science." And then standing outside the annual meeting of the American Psychiatric Association in Philadelphia and asking the doctors from all over the world, "What is the basis when you say that someone has ADHD or schizophrenia or bipolar? What is the proof?" "Well, there is no real proof. It's all subjective. So it means that any kind of behavior that seems unnormal, you're now listing as one of these, as one of the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Psychiatry diseases, and you give them a prescription." You say, "Yeah." I mean, there was no sense of irony that there is no science whatsoever in the entire mental health field. And yet 20 to 25% of Americans are now taking their drugs. For what? How's it supposed to help them? Can you show me a single drug for psychiatry that actually helps a person? You cannot. And research for the documentary, I looked at every study there was. And yet, here's the reality. I've seen patients on as many as 18 prescription drugs. And that is not uncommon. Now, in fact, 200,000 Americans are killed every year by prescription drugs alone, their adverse effects. So exactly what are we doing when we have real terrorism? It's called pharmaceutical terrorism. It's called medical terrorism. In 10 years, when you cause the unfortunate and preventable deaths of 5 million people, wouldn't you think someone should pay attention to that? They should. They don't. Because that would interfere with profits, and those people that own the companies that are making the drugs and advertising them, make sure that you buy the drugs, but you don't challenge them. I'm Gary Nall. More on these issues, on the corporatization of all things, on an upcoming program. Joining me in studio right now is Lou Ann Panessi. Hi, Lou Ann.
Hello, Gary. I have a letter here today from one of the participants in one of your recent retreats.
What's the name?
Her name is Gladys, and she is from the Bronx in New York. And she says that she was very grateful to have participated in the retreat. And she says, "I'm a Southern girl, so I ate a meat-centered diet for 67 years. She did manage to stop for a week when she came to your past retreat. But when she came back home, she couldn't keep it up. Slowly, she went back to meat. And she didn't stop smoking, though, after 40-plus years, and did continue to do 4 miles a day speed walking until I hurt my back. And she came to your most recent retreat back in, I think it was July. She says, here are the results from that 1 week. I am now vegetarian. I have not eaten, nor do I miss meat, since the retreat. I am so much calmer and so much happier. I am diabetic. My morning blood sugar ranged from 110 to 118 with medication. While I was at the retreat, I took no medication. My AM blood sugar dropped the first day to 108. It continued to drop to 101. And on July 20th, when I ran out of test strips, I hadn't checked it. So when I arrived home, my AM blood sugar was 98. And she said, for the past 2 months, I have not taken any medication, and my AM blood sugar has remained between, you ready, 87 and 97. After eating, it ranged from 200 to 250. Now it basically ranges from 150 to 200. Again, I am no longer on medications for diabetes. She lost 14 pounds and still losing. She said, my ankles, I had lower limb lymphedema, are about half the size that they were when I first came. My strength is returning. I was taking one step at a time up and down stairs. Now I can alternate like healthy adults do. She said, when I left, I could only walk one block before the intense back pain would force me to stop. The very first day off the plane, I walked four blocks. My daughter almost cried. She thinks you're a magician. I just think you're wonderful. She says, thank you, Gary, for saving my life. As I said, thank you for putting my feet on the path. I know it's up to me to continue down the road. I am and will always be your grateful student.
That's very nice. I'm glad to hear that people have good results like that. Let me just mention that that was a fundraiser for our sister station, KPFK in Los Angeles. We're doing one more of these retreats in October, the first 2 weeks of October, as a fundraiser for our sister stations where people are listening right now, WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York. And BAI in New York in particular really needs it because they're hurting financially. Their staff went from 26 or 27 down to 6. And their programming, a lot of it's being broadcast from California and brought in. They're just out of money. They can't pay for their premiums. So I said, at least the premium they can get because it's the retreat. And so for $2,000, which is dirt cheap, people get to spend a week in a wonderful environment with yourself counseling, with John Q doing personal exercise and fitness and water aerobics every day and meditation and a great masseuse, one of the best masseuses in America, who will be there. And we have an artist, a remarkable artist, who helps not only other artists but teaches art. And he believes that art is one great way of helping release the inner angst and get you on a life of creativity. So he's doing a class on art and healing. We have cooking classes. Claire is coming from Detroit. Cindy is coming from New York, both gourmet chefs. We have a phenomenal support team, Magdalena and Jimmy. Jimmy is one of the chief lead coaches of the Natural Living Walking Club, a 20-year veteran, New York Police Department, just retired, dynamically healthy, exuberant, and very conscientious. So we have all these wonderful people, about 20 staff, that are there and volunteering to help people on their journey of healing and detoxing. Nature, you've never seen nature. You look out, you're doing yoga, looking at a beautiful lake, woods with trees that are 150, 200 feet high, and magnificent marble gardens for meditation. And I'll be lecturing every day, and I do many lectures throughout the day. So wherever I'm at, I stop and I then do a wrap with people. It's a lot of fun. So this will be the last opportunity for a lot of people to really give themselves a chance to start over, cleanse, detoxify, rejuvenate, de-stress, really empower themselves as she did. And that's important, and that's what we want to do. So if people would like to join us the first 2 weeks of October, either the first or second week or both, call this number, and Luann will talk with you. I think you only have two spaces left anyhow. For the first week, I know you only have two.
Yes.
We were filled, but two people, well, a couple canceled and can't come. And I think we have three for the second week. Give them your number.
It's 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. And, you know, I have the great privilege, Gary, of interviewing a lot of these people. And you have such nice people in your audience. So many of them are eager to come on board. And, you know, they're looking to find a community of like-minded people. And this is a great way to start because I'm not having people come onto the property who are negative, critical, angry,
righteous. No. Let them stay where they're at.
Yes, exactly right. So remember, the people that are coming are going to be, they're going to be enthusiastic. They're going to be open. They're going to be strong-minded. They're going to be really excited.
And
about
we're
learning.
Also showing people the best ways of starting your life over, new careers, where to live, how to deal with the future, no matter what happens. People are finding friendships. People are doing things together. It's wonderful to see this happen. So I'm very, very excited. I'm looking forward to it. I donate my time, as you donate your time,
yes,
to help in this cause, because this is a fundraiser for WBAI and WPFW. And I found out why we had so few calls from PFW. They have 50,000 watts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now they have under 2,000 watts.
Oh.
They've, for the last 3 months, they've lost their signal. I didn't know that. I just found this out yesterday by when I was speaking with the station manager. So now, hopefully, in another couple of weeks, the signal will come back. They're working on it. But, boy, you lose 90% of your signal, 95% of your signal. You're going to lose 95% of your audience. So hopefully we can rebuild the audience in PFW, where I've been for 30 years. I'm on 5 days a week, Monday to Friday at 3 p.m. And one other thing, so if you want to come help the station, because it's a fundraiser, and it's our goal is to be able to pay WBI's salary of all the people there for 4 weeks to get them through a real cash crisis. And that's our goal. And I believe we can do that. And I'm also going to be interviewing people. You're going to be interviewing people. I'm going to be having a live-in caretaker, individual or couple, for the place, the ranch in Florida. One of the most beautiful places in America to be.
What an opportunity.
Yeah, I've not had a live-in person there for a long time, but it's needed. I get there as often as I can, but I need someone who has multi-skills, and it's a paying job, plus they get to live there and for free, so it's wonderful. People would like to be interviewed for that, relocating down to a beautiful part of Florida and a beautiful place. But you have to have some skills. It's not a place to go and meditate. all right. I'll get all these people say, I can't do anything, but I'd love to be there. Well, fine. You got to have some skills. Give them your number again.
Surely. It's 631-504-6198. Again, that's 631-504-6198. Give me a call.
Good. And by the way, I also interviewed Roberta Addy earlier today, and Roberta, who was on BAI for, I guess, 20 years with Armand DeMille, she was the interesting part of the show.
Oh, easy, easy.
So, I'm just joking.
I know.
You'll have to go get analyzed now after that. But she's going to be doing a show called To Hell and Back. It's a program about her journey and helping other people who are on the journey of dealing with addiction behavior, no matter what the addictive behavior. It's going to be very exciting and very powerful. Now, let's go over and say hello to, standing by, Dr. Tony Bark. Tony, here's the issue. In 2 days, we're going to be doing a premiere. It's the world premiere at the Ethical Culture Center at 64th and Central Park West for the new hard-hitting documentary. And it's called The Silent Epidemic.
Oh, I think I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's, well, I think you're in it substantially.
I think I'm in it.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
In fact, what was interesting, we have over 40 people in the film, and they're all asked the same question. And here's the question. Mm-hmm. Are vaccines safe? Are they effective? Because everyone you see in America who's getting a vaccine assumes they're safe and effective.
Absolutely.
And so take us on the journey that you have now of what, and by the way, just for people, senior citizens and people on limited income who are financially challenged, you can come for $10. This is also a fundraiser for WBAI. And for everyone else is $30, but you're going to have a panel afterwards of all interesting people. You're going to see the film and you're going to get two copies of the film. And all this is, again, to help the cause and to help the station. You can call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. Now, tell us what, in this abbreviated newsmaker, tell us what you think about the idea that vaccines are safe and effective in any single vaccine or any combination.
Okay. So first of all, that is the assumption. That's the assumption made by policymakers. That's the assumption made by physicians and by many people. And that was the assumption made by me when I was training in pediatrics, because that's what I was told. It was shoved down my throat and never questioned it. But when you go and look at the research, which I've done now, I went back to school, got a master's in the last few years, got my doctorate years ago. The research, just there is no research on the safety. There's zero research on safety. So the reason I say that is that if you look at vaccine studies, they all use fake placebos in their safety studies. And when I say fake placebo, I mean something that's not inert, something that's not safe, and in many cases experimental drugs or experimental vaccines, which, by the way, Gary, is in violation of the Helsinki Accord on human subject testing. You can only use a non-inert placebo like saline or glucose if you are using the current best treatment of the day for what you're testing it for, which absolutely is not the case. So in the case of Prevnar, the placebo was an experimental meningitis C vaccine. And then when that was taken off the market, the Prevnar 13, they used the initial Prevnar. So here we are looking at safety studies, which we really can't assess safety. So if you cannot, if you don't know the risk of something that you are trying to push on the public, you cannot make a risk benefit assessment because you don't have the risk. So you're missing half of the equation. So there we know we can't say that they're safe. That's one thing. We know that autoimmune disease, we know that cancer, we know that autism has been on the rise since we've been introducing more and more vaccines since we immunized the vaccine industry in 1986 from lawsuits. And so we do have a lot of evidence that vaccines are causing high amounts of autoimmunity, and autism might be part of that autoimmunity because there's a lot of evidence in postmortems that it's activation of the microglial cells, which is the immune cells in the brain. So we cannot say they're safe. And can we say they're effective? I don't even know that we can say they are effective in any large way, because if you look at the death rates of all the diseases that we vaccinate against, they were already at where they are now prior to the introduction of the vaccine. And in the case of polio, we know that we cause large outbreaks of vaccine-induced polio and paralysis. You're twice as likely to die from vaccine-induced polio than from wild type. We know that the measles vaccine fails, and there's something called the paradox of measles. If you've been vaccinated against measles, you're more likely to suffer from the measles outbreaks. Pertussis, the same thing. 90% of all the people in pertussis outbreaks have been fully vaccinated against pertussis, and I could go on and on. I know that's not the purpose of this show today. So can I say vaccines are safe and effective? Absolutely not.
Well, this is what the issue is. We have 900,000 plus physicians in the United States. There's only a handful, like yourself, after developing your academic background, after becoming a medical doctor, after becoming a pediatrician and going through all the coursework and running a pediatric center in a hospital, you were giving vaccines. You supported
Absolutely. Vaccines.
You would have argued that vaccines were safe and effective.
Right, but it would have been an argument based on nothing. I mean, it was just an argument based on belief system. I mean, part of your training is a belief system, right? And you're not made to be aware of bias in studies. You're not made to be aware of how to look at studies. Not even encouraged to read the studies, by the way. You know, doctors are trained as mechanics. We're mechanics. In some cases, highly paid mechanics, in some cases not. But basically, the MD training is really a mechanical training. This is the pathway. You've got this disease. This is the pathway. Answer yes or no. You go to this treatment. This is what all children get at all the same doses, at all the same age, no matter what is going on with them. So it's very mechanical. It is not analytical. It is not intellectual. I'm not saying that there aren't things that you have to overcome intellectually to get to med school or to go through med school, but for the most part, it's memorization, and it's doing what you're told to do. And it is a religion. The way doctors and the medical community looks at vaccines, it is actually a religious view, because it is not based on science. It's not based on anything that somebody individually looked at, because if they did, for instance, saying that the attributable rate of vaccines to autism is zero, you would have to fulfill that requirement to say it's an attributable rate, which means you must look at the rate of autism in the vaccinated community and subtract the rate of autism in the unvaccinated community. You have to look at the rate of autism in the completely unvaccinated community in order to say any statement about how much vaccines do or don't cause autism. And we don't have that study. And yet if you ask your typical pediatrician, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the CDC, the AMA, they will all tell you that it's been proven vaccines don't cause autism. However, none of the studies they can cite you look at the rate of autism in the unvaccinated, which means the numerator for the definition of attributable rate has not been fulfilled. You cannot make that statement. You can make other statements, but you can't make that statement.
Well, you did something they didn't. You did your homework. And the more homework you did, the more scholarship you engaged in, the more the truth appeared. And then you had the courage to acknowledge that you had to change, let go of your superstitions, let go of these unscientific beliefs, and embrace what the actual science showed you. I commend you, Tony Bark.
Thank
and
you.
All the good work you do out in Chicago. And by the way, Tony's website is disease-reversal.com. Disease-reversal.com.
Good luck Thursday night. I wish I could be there. I'll be there in spirit, and many of my comrades in this fight will be on the panel, as you know. So I'm really looking forward to Thursday night for you, Gary, and for all of us.
Great, and I'll send you a copy of the film right out.
Can't wait.
And that's Dr. Tony Bark, and she's one of about 40 women, mainly. Only one man, I think, is in the film, or two. And boy, you got to watch this interview I did with this Orthodox medical couple. Medical doctor, woman, man, believed in Orthodoxy until their daughter got the Gardasil vaccine, till their daughter became paralyzed. Then hear what they have to say when they step out of Orthodoxy and look for the truth. This is powerful. You won't want to miss this. This is one of those powerful, revealing, honest films you're ever going to see. So join me Thursday evening, 6:30, Ethical Culture Center, 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. For people who are financially challenged or senior citizens, it's only $10, and this is a donation to WBAI. For everyone else, it's $30, and you get two copies of the film and a press conference and a meeting afterwards. Thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Nall. Now let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Ahead of the president's address to the nation tonight on Syria, we'll be talking about new developments on the diplomatic front and a rare opportunity to settle political scores.
Good. You going to punch someone?
Just put me in a room with him. Just put me in a room.
Well, you'd have to get a ticket. Cornel West, a lot of other people are going to be ahead of you wanting to be in that room. Smackdown time. Utrice Lead at the Madison Square Garden.
In this corner. That's right. That's what
is the truth. Do. Everything else is in the other corner. Utrice Lead right now.
Thank you.